So our topic is obviously Parshas Balak, since it's a Parsha of Bura and Balak. For those of us other than Mark, that's our Parsha. Mark is doing Chazara. The fundamental question that so many people ask when they approach Parshas Balak is, why do we learn at all about Balak's attempt to hire Bilam to curse the Jews? Why is that at all relevant? When you think about it, the story goes from beginning to end without any Jews involved. No Jews get hurt. It's just, it's somebody who is afraid of the Jews who hires someone to curse us. He has a nice little adventure with his donkey on the way to trying to curse us. He fails and issues a bracha a couple of times and a prediction about the future, and that's it. And then he goes home. So why do we tell the story at all?
It shows like how much God likes us.
Right. So that's a simple, I think, and straightforward approach. I brought it for you in source number one, where we are told, "V'lo'ava Hashem alokach l'shmo el Bilam." Hashem did not listen to Bilam. "V'yapoch Hashem alokach l'chaz haklal l'bracha." Hashem converted the curse to a bracha. That's the Torah's verdict on the entire story. Is that it's a demonstration of Hashem's love for us. For all we know, it's only with this account here in Dvarim Chav Gimel that the Jews even learn about it. Because how else would they have known anything? Right? They don't receive the Torah as a package deal. Well, that depends. That's actually not so clear. The Gemara has a discussion about when they receive each section and so on. Fine. But that's one possibility. Another possibility for why the Torah tells us about it is very practical, which is because of the end of the parasha. It sets up the end of the parasha, in which the daughters of Moab go out to try to seduce the Jews and bring them to their Avodah Zarah. So that story is an outgrowth of Bilam's advice. He says, "I'm going to give you counsel to explain what you should do." The Medrash explains, he's advising them about the end of the parasha. There's more to be said about the connection between the beginning of the parasha and the end, but it's not for right now. Another approach is that it teaches us about sorcery. In other words, this is one of the practices of the people of the land to which you are now arriving. And you're supposed to learn, as the Torah will say, not to practice kachol atoivos haheim, not to do the things that they do that are abhorrent, and one of those is kosim ksamim, to be involved in sorcery. But I think there's yet another element to this, and it's what I want to focus on, which is, it teaches us about Moab. We learn about Moab. It's not really about Bilam. The story is actually Balak's story. And we care about Moab. And I wrote this up in a brief form in the Parsha article for Toronto Torah this week, but I wanted a chance to explore it a little bit further, so that's this. If you take a look at source number two, I apologize for not doing translations on the Psukim of Tanakh and one of the other sources I see I also skipped doing, but we'll get through it, really. This is from the 15th Perek in Yeshaya. So for those who remember when we were doing the Yeshaya Chabura, because we actually did get past this point, but for those who didn't, I'll explain it now. This parak in Yeshaya is part of an overall section in which Yeshaya presents predictions of the fall of various nations who are our neighbors and have done things to us, negative things to us, over time. So he talks about Bavel. And then, after talking about Bavel, he talks about Moab. But look at the way that the Nevuah begins. Masa Moav. Masa is a term in general for a negative nevuah, a nevuah about punishment. Something bad is coming. That's usually when it's called a masa. Masa literally is a burden. So the burden of Moav. Ki balel shudad ar Moav. At night, the city Ar is the name of a city, was destroyed. It was looted. Nidma, it was cut off. Ki balel shudad kir Moav nidma, because at night, Kir, another of Moav's cities, was attacked and destroyed, and then the psukim go through the destruction of various cities of Moab. So, just looking through it quickly, you see Divon is another one that's famous. Bamot may have been another city as well. Nevo is another one. Madva is another one. It goes through all the cities of Moab and describes the destruction. Why it talks about the city names is a good discussion for another time. It's not for right now. But the jump down to Pasuk Hey. after talking about all the cities and their grief at the destruction that comes to them, it says, Libi leMoav yizak. My heart cries out for Moab. Bricha ad soar is a very important phrase. Can we take it in different ways? Right now, we'll take it the way that many take it, which is her refugees flee, right, Livroach, to the place called Soar. That's going to matter to us in a while. But Yeshaya says, Libi leMoav yizak. My heart cries out on behalf of Moab. In other words, I care about Moab. The same thing comes up in the next parak in source number 3, and I'm looking at the second half of source number 3. We have to come back to the first half. But the second half of source number 3, he's still in this description of the fall of Moab. It's Prakim Tezvav and Tezayin are about that. So he describes Moab being brought down in Pasuk Vav, and then in Pasuk Zayin he talks about Moab crying, and then he gets to Pasuk Tes, sentence 9, Alkein Evkeh Bivchi Ya'azer, therefore I cry for Ya'azer, another of these cities of Moab that gets destroyed. So Yeshaya is crying for Moab. And then the third example of it is actually from Yirmiyahu in source number 4, where he talks about the fall of Moab, and in Pasuk Lamed Vav. You see that? The end of source number 4? Alkein libi leMoav kachalilim yehemet. Therefore my heart for Moab will mourn, or will wail, or will moan perhaps, like chalilim. Chalilim are... Sorry?
Corpses?
No, that's halalim. What are halilim? You guys didn't have that in school? Oh, for us, they made us take halil. Halil is recorder in English. It's like a sort of flute.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's the idea is that from the word halal, it's a hollow, right? It's a hollow wind instrument, basically. So, again, Yirmiyahu, in this case, is crying for Moab. So what I want to suggest is that we tell the story in Parashas Balak, not only because of the lessons it teaches about Hashem's love for us, and about what Bilam tried to do, and about sorcery, and there's also a relationship with Moab. Sorry, Shemi, you were going to say?
No.
Okay. There's a relationship with Moab, and then the question you have to ask is, well, why? Why is there a message with Moab? They hate us. Right, I brought you in source number 5, quick digest of Psukim, right? The message that goes to Bilam is, Hinei Ami Atzami Mitzrayim, some nation came out of Egypt. Kisah Seinu Haaretz, they've covered the entire land. Hu Yoshev Mimuli, they're right here opposite us. Curse them, right? And I will chase them out of the land. They want to get rid of us. Why in the world is Yeshaya crying for these people? They want to get rid of us. They think terrible things about us.
So what is the suffering, right, you know?
Not so what they're still suffering. I mean, these are direct enemies.
Okay, so what, you're going to celebrate your enemy suffering? Like,
I think we sang as Yashir.
But it's only Moab that you see.
Yeah, but you're not necessarily...
That's what we have to talk about. Yeah. It's a good question. Hang in there. Jay asks, is it only Moab that we do this for? Remember, that famous Gemara that talks about how Lo Karav Ze El Ze, that the Malachim didn't sing, right, the night when the Egyptians drowned, because Hashem's handiwork is drowning in the sea and so on, that's only the Malachim. It's fine for the Jews to say. It's their enemy who tried to destroy them.
Maybe just put them on a different level, the Mitzrayim and Moab, and therefore...
And say the Moab isn't as bad as Mitzrayim?
And therefore you...
Maybe. Or they weren't as successful. They weren't as successful as Mitzrayim. I mean, if you look at source number 5, not only did they say, let's get rid of them, right? But the end of source number 5, comes from the end of Parashas Balak, but they called the Jews to their idolatry, and the nation participated in it, and they got drawn to Baal Peor. They lured us into immorality and idolatry, and thousands of Jews died. And it's not just that. They have future problems. In Parak Gimel in Shoftim, right, Eglon Melech Moav is... the whole story with Ehud ben Gera, right, is oppressing us, dominating us then, and then it continues in Malachim Beis with an attack against us during the first Beis HaMikdash. I brought you a little piece about the Mesha Stili, if you're not familiar with it. Mesha, king of Moab, has this record of what he claims was his destruction of the Jewish populations east of the Yarden. And if you take a look, he describes how in one particular attack, in the part that I brought in, source number 6, he says he killed out 7,000 male citizens and aliens, female citizens and aliens and servant girls, right? He massacred us so much so that in source number 7 we are told, Lo sidro shlomam v'tovasam kol yamecha le'olam, don't seek their peace, don't seek their benefit, right? Just what they did in Chumash, don't seek their peace and their benefit. So I don't understand why we're crying for Moav. So I want to give 4 answers. The first answer is we're not really crying for Moav. Don't get so caught up in it. Ibn Ezra and Radak, I brought you Radak in source number 8, he says on that pasuk that we first read in number 2 from Yeshaya, Libi leMoav Yizak, my heart cries out for Moav. He says, Medaber anavi al lashon ha'am, sheomar kol echad mehem kach. He says, the Navi is talking about what the people will say. The people of Moav are crying. They are crying for Moav. It means that they're crying in the third person. Right, Libi leMoav Yizak, if you're really quoting them, is a little bit strange. But that's one way to take it. And in fact, there's a pasuk which I happened to see this morning in Yeshaya Chavalef, that's why I brought over the Tanakh, in which he's speaking about Bavel, and he says, Alkein mal'u masnai chalchala, therefore my loins are trembling. And he's describing the news of the trouble that's going to befall Bavel. And Rashi there comments and says, pshat in that pasuk is that he's talking about Bavel being like this, not himself. So you could give the Ibn Ezra / Radak answer that it is Moav describing its own grief. And don't get all caught up in it. Yishai is not crying for Moav. That's one possible take. Malbim similarly says that section in Yeshaya here is talking about how the warriors there are going to be galvanized. The warriors of Moav are going to be galvanized to fight, and they're going to get crushed when they try to. And he's crying out, "No, don't do it." That's one approach. However, Rashi here in Yeshaya, not here in Shachvav, in Yeshaya Tesvav, actually does believe that it is Yeshaya crying for Moav. In Bavel's case, he says, "Yeah, pshat is that it's not." But in Moav, he really does. So I think your second approach has to be that you have to remember who Moav is to us. Who's the ancestor of Moav? Who's the patriarch of Moav? Lot, right? Lot is the patriarch of Moav. What is Lot's relationship with the Jews? Sorry?
Good.
No, I don't mean like adjective wise, like physically, biologically. What's his relationship with the Jews?
Depends who you start with, like nephew or uncle.
Right. Lot is Sarah's brother and Abraham's nephew. Right? Remember, if you remember how the genealogy works, Abram has a brother named Haran. Haran has a daughter by the name of Yiska, who is Sarah, and he has a son by the name of Lot. So so Lot is Sarah's brother and Abraham's nephew. As a matter of fact, this is something I haven't seen people comment on. Someone must have said this. There's a fascinating irony. How did Lot and Abraham come to separate? Why did they separate?
The shepherds were fighting.
Right, why? There wasn't enough grassland, right, for the animals. We have too many animals. There isn't enough grassland for our animals. Therefore, I'll go right, you'll go left, right? The beginning of the parsha, Balak's concern is not the Jews are going to fight a war against us. Balak's concern is, right? They covered the entire land, and they're going to lick up all of the grassland. They're going to destroy all the resources. It's the same fight that went on between Abraham and Lot is now restarted by Balak and Moav against the Jews. I haven't seen anybody write this up, but someone must have commented on this. But that's their relationship with us, first round. And then the second round of their relationship is Rus. Right, Rus is from Moab, and she is the ancestress of David HaMelech and the whole Davidic dynasty. So, in other words, they are their family, and so maybe that's why we cry for them. And indeed, we cry for Moab. I'm not interested in crying for Bavel, but Moab I'm going to cry for. And Yeshaya supports this read. Go back to what I highlighted for you back in number 2. When in Pasuk Hey, Libila Moav Yizak, Bericheha Ad Tsoar, Mark, you still there? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Good. The pasuk there in pasuk Hey, Libi L'Moav Yizak, I cry out for Moav. Bericheha Ad Tzoar, those who flee to Tzoar. Yes, it is. Your passion. But who was it? Lot. Lot fled to Tzoar. When they left Sodom, right, he said, there's this little city, Imotel Nasham, Halom Mitzarhi, Itchi Nafshi. That's where I can flee, because it is small, you should spare it, right? So Moab flees to Tzoar the way Lot once fled to Tzoar. Not only that, but according to Rashi, which I brought you in number 9, Yeshaya attributes the suffering of Moab to their ingratitude for Abraham's care for Lot. If you take a look, it's verse number 9. I brought you I translated on the flip side. The pasuk says, Al-Kain Yisra Asa, that Moab amassed wealth. Tavo Alav Abranus Hazeh, this punishment should befall Moab, Shahayu Kfuye Tova, because they were ungrateful. Shari Bekal Mekomos Amad Abraham Lelot, because in various times Abraham stood on behalf of Lot. Not only when the war of the four kings and the five kings happened, but Betzeso Mecharan, when they left Haran, Avram took Lot along with him. Now, you could say, well, he's Sarah's brother, what else are you going to do? But he was an adult. It's not like he was a kid. We don't actually know ages, but it sounds like he's an adult. But Avram takes Lot with him when they go to Israel. And then Belechto Lemitzrayim, when they go down to Egypt, he takes Lot with him as well, because there's a famine in Israel. And then Ubizchuso Shulach Mitocha Hafecha. In Abraham's merit, Lot gets out of Sodom. Rashi goes out of order here. It's not clear to me why. It's not in historical order. V'nilchama lavim Amrafel v'chaverav. Abraham goes to war against the four kings, right? Saving Lot. V'ayalam ligmol tov lezaro. They should have done good things to Abraham's descendants. And instead, they oppress them. When Sanherib exiles the tribes that are east of the Yarden, and the Jews are all crying and wailing and so on, Hayu Omrim Lahem. The Medrash records that the people of Moab say to the Jews, Amatem Mitonanim, why are you upset? Why are you upset at being sent into exile? Halolah beis avichem atem holchem. You're going home. Avram avichem lo me'evra naharba. Didn't Avram, your ancestor, come from Iraq, from Aram? V'zeo shenemar shamati cherpas moav gudufei b'nei Amon. The Medrash gets it based on, in part, the pasuk in Tzefanya. I heard the shame of Moab, the giduf, the blasphemy. Not blasphemy, it's not a good translation. The mockery. I like that. I did a good job of that. The mockery from Bnei Amon. Va'od shesiu es Sancheirv shalosh shanim shetzar al Shomron, and they help Sancheirv during his 3-year siege against Shomron. That's a whole other discussion there in Yeshaya and Perek Tzayin. But the point for us, the message for us is that you are supposed, even as he's blaming them, he's saying they were ungrateful for what Abraham did, but he's also calling to mind that we had a relationship with them. There was a relationship all along. And in fact, if you go back to the first side, to source number 3, the beginning of Yeshaya Tezayin, this is a controversial section, the opening 5 psukim there. It's hard to read this section, but one solid approach among the commentators to the opening psukim of Perek Tzayin is that Yeshaya calls upon Moav to shelter our refugees when we will be exiled by Sancheirev, saying that we took care of their refugee Lot, therefore they should take care of our refugees. So if you take a look at the psukim in particular, look at Pasuk Gimel. Havi'i Eitza, take counsel. Asu Plila, come up with a strategy. Shisi Kalayel Tzilech Besoch Tzaharayim, extend your shade, your protective shade, like night, in the heat of the day. Satri Nidachim, protect those who are pushed away, no day, the ones who are wandering. Al Tegali, do not exile them. The statement is that you should take care of the Jews when they are exiles. And then the last thing that I wanted to show you there is still in source number 3 is pasuk Hey, Vulchan b'chesed kisei v'yashav alav be'emes be'ohel David. He's talking about the future king of the Jews who will sit on the throne in truth in the tent of David. He invokes David, who is, again, a descendant of Moab. So my point is that when Yeshaya cries for Moab, he invokes the image of their family relationship historically. He invokes Zoar, how he fled to Zoar, and in Avram's merit was saved. He invokes the ingratitude of Moab for what Avram did on behalf of Lot. Look, you amassed all this wealth. You should be grateful because all of this came about through what Avram did for Lot. And he says, you should take care of our refugees the way that they took care of yours. And he invokes David HaMelech. So your second approach could be that Yeshaya is crying for the pain of this family, that they're still family. Yes, they've done terrible things to us. They tried to do terrible things to us. But they're still family. That's the second approach. Third approach is brought by the Tzidkas HaTzadik, Rav Tzedek HaKohen of Lublin. And he says that it's not just about Moab. Go back to Jay's question, do we only find this regarding Moab? First of all, there is a pasuk in Yechezkel where he seems to cry for Tyre, for Tzor, as I recall, for Tzor and Sidon. So the idea of crying elsewhere, we'll see it, we didn't get there yet. But there is a possibility of crying for others, and the Tzidkas HaTzadik thinks that's true, that they would cry for any nation that was slated for destruction, but not about mercy. Not because of mercy, rather because of loss of potential. Take a look at source number... number 11. What did I do with number 10? I skipped number 10. Oh, number 10 was the Radak about the refugees. That was the idea. Okay, fine. But number 11 is... The Tzidkas HaTzadik, Rav Tzedek HaKohen of Lublin, who says, "V'lachein hanavim hayu miyalalim al avdan ha'umot." The prophets wailed for the destruction of nations. He gives you the pasuk in Yirmiyahu as an example. He also brings you the Yeshaya pasuk, and I just didn't bother bringing it because then I would have to translate it. And then he adds in there also, where I skipped, that the Medrash, which we haven't seen yet, but we will, praises them for having such tears. And he says, "V'vade lochashu al ibud." He says, come on, you're not really worried, you're not really upset about the loss of their bodies, their death. Keep up over Sharmina. There's joy at the destruction of the wicked, he quotes you from Mishlei. But you have to know that every nation has a special ability. Everyone has a special trait. The Avdan Uma Pratis, he ibud memshelas oso koch pratis. So if that nation is destroyed, then you lose that power. Whatever it was that they brought to the table is gone. So the Tzidkas HaTzadik takes this very utilitarian view and says he's crying because the world will suffer for the fact that Moab will not develop their special potential. That's your third answer. So your first answer is, no, we don't really care. Your second answer is, they're family. Your third answer is, they have potential. And then the last answer goes back towards where Shimi was, which is to suggest that it's actually about mercy. And it's based on the Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah in source number 12, which Rav Tzedek mentioned, and Rashi relies on when he says that this is really about mercy. All of our prophets had mercy for the Jews as well as for the idolaters. And he quotes you the pasuk from Yirmiyah, and he quotes you the Yechezke one that I mentioned, Ben Adam Sa'al Tzor Kina, raise wailing for Tzor, for Tyre, which is not Moab, it's nations in general. The point of this medrash is to contrast us with Bilam. Vizeh achzari, this cruel person, Amad Lakor Umashlema Chinam Alodavar, he wanted to uproot us for nothing. Now, the truth is, it wasn't for nothing. It was that he'd get paid. But you understand the idea. L'chach nichtav ha-parshas Bilam l'hodiya l'masila k'kadosh baruch u'ruach ha-kadosh me'ov de'kochavim. And he says, you record this story. I asked the question, why is this story here? You record this story in order to teach why Hashem removed Ruach HaKodesh from them. And, flip side, why we get it. Because we had this mercy. Shazel amad mehem. Right, this guy, he got up from among them, were Amasa, and see what he went and did. So the additional idea for why we teach this story. Right? We gave a bunch of explanations. One is to show Hashem's love for us. Another one is to set up the end of the parsha. Another was to teach us about sorcery. Another one is to teach us about Moab. But now Bamidbar Rabbah adds a note for us to see the way that Bilam treated us and the fact that he was merciless, and contrast that with the function of and the identity of our Nevi'im. But the point for the, to go back to the question of why cry for Moab, is that this Medrash is telling us it's a positive thing when the Nevi'im cry for them. The Tzikas HaTzadik says it's not really about mercy, it's about, you know, Baltashas. But others say no, it is mercy oriented. And here I saw a very interesting comment from Rav Zev Wolf Turbovitz in the Ziv Mishnah on Hilchos Tefillah. And no, if I didn't have the Bar Ilan that has the Ziv Mishnah, I would never have known it existed. This is true. Nonetheless, fascinating note. He's commenting on the brachas for the Haftorah. So we in the brachas we say Habocher b'Nevi'im Tovim, right? They are Shabachar b'Nevi'im Tovim. We bless Hashem for choosing good Nevi'im. So he's bothered. What does that mean? Good Nevi'im. So he explains. He bracha al Nevi'im Atzman. This bracha is for the fact that we have the Nevi'im. Moshe Rabbeinu Olav Hashalom Av HaNevi'im Gamkin Bechlalam, including Moshe, who is the source of all Nevuah. Va'anu mevarachim Lashem Yisbarach, all Nevi'im, I should say. Va'anu mevarachim Lashem Yisbarach al Shabachar Ba'em Behiyosam Ro'im Tovim V'Rachmanim. We make this bracha because Hashem chose leaders who would be good and merciful. Ki Moshe Rabbeinu v'chol ha'neviim kulam masru nafshem al Yisrael. They gave their lives for us. V'gam ba'ar ha'umos, and for the nations. And he quotes you the pasuk from Yeshaya. Libi l'moav Yizak. Uchda amru chazal. V'gam banu l'shlol bazen nevi'ei ha'sheker asher hisu es Yisrael v'lo chamlu alayam asher lo bachar b'ayam Hashem. And it's also excluding the prophets of the nations who were not merciful. So he says, when we make this bracha, Asher Bachar b'Nevi'im Tovim, we are thanking Hashem for choosing Nevi'im who are merciful. So the last element of it is that, in fact, it does teach us mercy, and that's another reason why we mention this story, why we tell the story, because we're supposed to learn about them. You learn about them, you become somewhat, I mean, the story doesn't paint them in a very sympathetic light. But maybe even just having a sense of the fear that they felt is something. So what I think is that, you know, this goes beyond Moav, meaning this is how we look at the world. And when you read about human suffering anywhere in the world, right? The Nevi'im Tovim could simultaneously convey divine condemnation, which is what Yeshaya primarily does to Moav, and personal grief. Right? He's doing it at the same time. I don't know anything about the divine condemnation. I don't have any nevuah, right? If I read about suffering going on in fill-in-the-blank nation somewhere in the world, I don't have the condemnation part that Yeshaya has, but I do have the ability to feel compassion for them, to feel grief for their suffering. So I think the lesson that we get from the Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah and the Ziv Mishnah's comment and Yeshaya is that if nations are suffering somewhere in the world, we should also have this Libi Limoav Yizak type of a reaction. Okay?
Yeah. I was wondering if the reason we focus on Moab so much really is like a contrast between the two. Because we have that Rashi before that they're Kibui Tova and all these things.
Right. So that's a theme that I like to do when I do Shoftim with people, is in general, the enemies who are introduced to us in Shoftim, and it's not just Shoftim, but it happens to be a perfect example because it's a villain of the... in television, villain of the week type of a thing. So each story introduces you to a new villain, and you get to meet somebody new and think about what's their relationship with us. All of them have lessons like that to teach us. Moab is a good example of it, but for example, another example, Aram is also in Shoftim Perek Gimel. I haven't taught it this week. And Aram is who we would have been if not for Lech Lecha. Right? Abraham left Aram because Hashem told him to leave. Had he not left, he would have been... Aram is the source, in fact, for potentially all of the biological Jews. Depending on how you understand Bilhah and Zilpah and where they came from, were they in fact sisters of Rachel and Leah or not, like the Medrash, you know, suggests. But even without them, right, Abraham is from Aram, right, the whole male side of the family, and Sarah is also from Aram. who else is there in the family? The ones who married in, which is to say, Rivka, who is from Aram, and Rachel and Leah, who are from Aram. Right? Again, Bilhah and Zilpah are the only question marks in this story. But we're all Aramean. And because of Lech Lecha, therefore we are not Aram. Which is why it makes sense that they are the first enemy of the Jews in Shoftim. Because Hashem rebukes us and says, you didn't do what you were supposed to do in the land. You effectively have defied Lech Lecha. Therefore, I'm going to bring Aram to do a Lech Lecha of their own to enter your land and fight against you. You follow? But Aram is easy pickings. You can see things like that when you deal with the other enemies as well. Ammon has its own piece to it also. The Plishtim have their own piece to it. Each of these nations has a way in which you can look at their history and you can look at their traits and see kind of that kind of a dynamic. Ayin Shom. Yishkoach.